Hello.
Hola.
Welcome back to Double Indemnity, the podcast where we discuss and review new movie releases. I'm Emily.
I'm Jonathan Pyle.
Good for you.
I guess we don't have to say our last names anymore because we have the same last name.
I guess we do. I don't know. Can you prove it?
Can I prove that my last name is Pyle? I can.
We'll just have to see about that one. So, couple of intros to the podcast. Be prepared for lots of spoilers. Also, follow us on Letterboxd at @DI_podcast. We post the movies there before we talk about them. That's the gist of it. Are you ready for the first segment of the podcast?
Yeah.
What are we watching right now?
Oh, goodness.
We're watching 9 Perfect Strangers on Hulu, which has Nicole Kidman in it, and I love her. But I was kind of expecting more out of it.
It's okay.
I was thinking about a different show today that it reminded me of that I was like, I feel like they're trying to be this show. Oh, Beans wants to come up.
What?
I can't remember it, though.
Who did it have in it?
I don't remember. All I remember today, I was like, this is trying to be like this, but it's not as good as it. I don't know. Not as much of a thriller as I was thinking it would be. I don't remember what it was like, but it was crazy. It's been a long day at work, so give a girl a break.
True.
So, I made myself a cup of tea today because it's cold outside now, which is good and a bad thing because it means all the good movies are coming out because, as Jonathan said earlier today, it's fall. But then it also means that it's cold outside, which I just don't like particularly like at all.
Me either. And we live in South Dakota.
Which is conflicting.
Which is kind of
an issue. What is it? A conflict of interest?
Yes.
What exactly does that mean?
It means like... I'm trying to think of like a.
I feel like I hear it example. In use all the time, but I don't know if it's actually like.
It's like, oh, I want to like hire this person, but they're also my nephew.
That's so a something, conflict of interest. So something that could cause problems.
Something that can cause like, I can't think of the words.
Okay, it's been a long day, friends.
Yeah.
Are we watching anything else other than 9 Perfect Strangers? Did we watch any movies?
We watched Downsizing, which was dog shit.
Okay, that was so disappointing. I really thought Downsizing was going to be like, it started out so good. Like, the story was so good. And they could have done so much with it. And then instead they took it off into like a ridiculous direction, which was just terrible. Yeah, like, it wasn't good. It wasn't necessary.
It was not good.
It was very disappointing, so.
I'm watching Jack Ryan, The Bear, and
all of which without me.
Yeah, all of which without her.
I'm working on a quilting project right now, which means my time is very full. So Jonathan then has a lot of free time while I'm quilting to watch shows.
I do indeed.
And I swear I'm not like abandoning my husband. I just watch. I'll probably quilt for like an hour before you get up on the weekends and like maybe an hour in the middle of the day.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I'm not like a crazy person. Crazy. Bean, stop dropping your bone. Here you go. Do you want to intro the movie?
Yeah, movie is Anatomy of a Fall, directed by Justine Triet.
Is that a
Juan
woman?
Justine?
Oh my gosh.
She is a director, yes. She's directed a couple other movies, but not any that you would know, or I would know, honestly.
Okay.
Last one was Sybil, directed in 2019.
Okay, never heard of that.
Yeah, me neither. The movie stars Sandra Hüller as Sandra Voite.
Oh, her name's actually Sandra.
Yeah, along with another
That's
person.
That's convenient.
I know. Swan, I'm going to just butcher these names. Swan Artaud as Vincent, her lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Antoine Reinhartz as the prosecutor. I wrote the prosecuted. Milo Grenier as Daniel and Samuel Thace as Samuel.
So both of them, the main couple, they use their real names. I wonder if like the person who wrote it like had the actors in mind.
It was not planned.
It wasn't planned?
It was not planned.
Both of them?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, not both of them.
That is so crazy. Oh my gosh.
All right. I thought that was wild. The plot. A woman is suspected of her husband's murder, and their blind son faces a moral dilemma as the main witness.
Well,
couldn't have said it any better myself. Oh, wait, I did say it myself.
Well, you didn't write that. Someone else did. Are you talking about my right. woe?
What's up?
Are you talking about my woe, or are you talking about the description?
Both.
Okay.
Budget?
I'm going to guess...
We're going in
7
euros.
7 million? Euros.
Euros.
7 million euros.
6.2.
Dang! I'm so good at this!
You're getting a lot better, honestly. When we first started doing this, I was like...
I was just throwing random just crap. Like, and you know what? I still throw random crap out there, too. I'm surprised at how good I am at it.
It's made $14 million at the box office.
That's really good.
I know, right? I was surprised, too.
Yeah.
It
makes me so sad that, like, beautiful films like this get, like, crap compared to, like, Fast and Furious X, you know?
Yes,
which
totally.
Makes, like, it has, like, one of the most expensive budgets in the world and, like, makes the crappiest movie ever.
I know, right? God, it is heartbreaking. Beans. You're right. Beans, you were being problematic.
Keep having to retrieve her bone for her because she keeps dropping it.
Goodness. I gave this movie a 4 out of 5.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I gave it 4.5.
4.5.
Yeah. I quite liked it. I very much appreciated it.
I'm very glad.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, as far as like court case procedurals go, I quite enjoyed it.
You enjoy a court case movie?
Every now and then. This one was a good one for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked how it gave you new information during the case that you did not know beforehand. So it's almost like you were part of the jury. Does that make sense?
I guess, but also like, I feel like you knew exactly what they were going to give you because they told you like at one point, like, oh, there's this damning piece of evidence, but we're not going to, they don't, that's the one piece of evidence they don't tell you. So you're like, okay, they'll show us this eventually. You know what I mean? Like you're just kind of like waiting for them to show you the piece of evidence. I get it. But I get, it was also part of the climax. And it's also like, I think very clarifying for the story as well that they kept that piece of evidence like private.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, overall, I thought it was like a very thought-provoking film. Like there's a lot of themes in it. There's a lot of like heavy topics. And like you are questioning yourself the whole time because you don't even know who to believe. Like it's all so circumstantial, the evidence, and it's all like you don't even know whose side that you're on. And yeah. You really only get the perspective of Sandra like during the whole thing, so you don't really know what Samuel was going through, which I kind of think was smart because then it's almost like a real trial of like Samuel's not here anymore, we only have these fragments of like his impact on the earth, like the way Sandra talks about him, the recordings he's made, the impact he had on his child. Yeah, like yeah. It's like you're grasping at threads to try to understand this person, and it felt very like realistic to me in that sense.
That
they didn't, I really liked that they didn't do flashbacks to their relationship as a couple because they could have easily done that as like a basic way of developing their relationship and showing you how their relationship truly was. And I liked how instead they like threaded it into the way she talks about him, how she doesn't admit to the bad things at first, but then the more that you question, the more you kind of realize like it was not all like sunshines and rainbows.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it slowly comes out. I really liked the way that they developed their relationship because
me too.
You knew there was animosity from the start, but other than that, like, you kind of have to take what all the characters say because there's no other proof.
You didn't really know.
Yep. I liked that a lot. I truly thought it was a wonderful movie. And I think it's a lot more a story of a family, like, facing their demons rather than, like, a true crime thriller, which...
Agreed.
Which I kind of thought it was going to be a true crime thriller.
The second trailer made it seem like a, like, balls-to-the-wall thriller.
Really?
Yeah, the first trailer didn't, but the second trailer did.
Yeah, I didn't see the trailers for this. honestly, like, I feel like sometimes when it's a badly made trailer, like, it kind of just ruins the movie for you because you know what's going to happen. So, like, a lot of times, if I love seeing trailers in the movie theater, like, love that. But, like, you have a hobby of watching, like, trailers as they come out and keeping up with, like, new announcements and stuff. Whereas for me, I kind of like the surprise.
I get that.
In the theaters. But also, I'm not opposed to you giving me updates and everything. Like, he just told me they're making a Cleopatra movie and everything. Yeah. And, like, yeah. I'm not mad at you for saying that. I'm excited about it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. No, that came out 3 days ago that they're making a new Cleopatra movie. And you are behind. I just found out today. I was like, what's going on?
You know, you're just so present in your life.
In our relationship.
In our relationship. In the, you know, development of your dog child.
Our dog, yeah. That's true.
We're at that point in life where our child is our dog and all we care about is if she's happy all the time, which is a great phase of life. Enjoy it. Because, you know, one day we'll be looking back at this and be like, what? That was such a crazy time. Sorry, I got a little off topic there. Also, before we get into the talking about it, I just want to give a suicide warning. There is a large discussion of suicide within this movie.
Thank you.
As well in the plot. So if you're not comfortable listening to that, maybe this isn't the review for you, but we have a bunch of other ones, so go listen to those. Just wanted to say that because it's a very sensitive topic for a lot of people for an understandable reason. So there is a warning before we get into everything. And then I also wanted to talk about something that I saw. I was kind of looking up... different views of the movie because I tend to like have my theories of what all the symbolism was, but I also kind of like to look up and see what other people thought too. And something that I thought was interesting online, and I think would be kind of a nice introduction to the podcast, was that the Washington Post had written an article about the movie, and they said that it is in whole an allegory of all the ways that women are judged and found wanting, for having too many or too few sexual needs, to not prioritizing their children enough, or simply not apologizing for being flawed. And I actually thought that was a really wonderful way to view the movie, because there's so many other things that they didn't even mention in that sentence. Like,
yeah.
Like there's the stereotype of a husband who resents his wife for being more successful than him. There's a woman not being like emotional enough or compassionate enough on the surface. There's the theme of like a woman having to maintain her temper, but her husband can yell at her and that's fine. You know, like a lot of that's stereotypical themes of like womanhood and what's expected of a woman. And
yeah. That's all present there. That's good.
Yeah. I thought that was a really interesting point, and I wanted to lead with that because I think that's going into like watching the movie and like analyzing it, it kind of completely changes like everything. And you kind of notice all these little things that like people are criticizing her for doing this, or like she's struggling with this and people are hating her for it. And it's like, it's kind of, they're just like, just fitting into the stereotypes of like how a woman has to act in society. It's really
that's
cool.
That's a really cool note, actually.
Thank you. And thank you to the Washington Post for sparking my curiosity.
Yeah, definitely. This film also won the Palme d'Or.
Yes, we can't forget that.
At the Cannes Film Festival, the highest award there. I forgot what else I was going to say.
Anything else about that? Well, we reviewed the winner of the Palme d'Or. Is that what it said?
Palme d'Or.
Palme d'Or. We reviewed it last year, The Triangle of Sadness, right?
That's right. That was like episode number...
It was one of our first podcast episodes.
Yeah, like four or five.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I love Triangle of Sadness, though. We should make it a thing. We always review the Palme d'Or. I don't know how to say that. I'm sorry.
I don't know how to say it either.
The winner of that award, because I apparently like it every year. So
that's true. Yeah. A lot of them are pretty good. I need to watch more winners. I've been tracking it on my list on Letterboxd.
Isn't Triangle of Sadness the first movie that we saw at the State Theater?
No, we saw The Birds with your parents.
Oh. But still, it was one of the
first. Triangle of Sadness was probably the second one, though.
I remember Triangle of Sadness, when you go in, they like give you a warning of like nausea, like, and they will offer you like throw up
bags.
I was like, what? Because I get really nauseous watching like home family videos, just like the shaky camera and stuff. And I get more car sick from that than I do in an actual car for some reason. But
older I've gotten, the more like throw up in movies affects me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like it.
I'm so the same. It's like the older I get, my tolerance for things is getting lower, which you would think like as you get older, it gets better.
I know, right? As a kid, like that wouldn't bother me at all.
Yeah, literally. Same thing with like gory stuff.
Really?
It bothers me more now than it used to. Like, I mean, I did a lot of internships growing up in medical fields. I watched a lot of surgeries, a lot of people being cut open, and I was fine. Yeah. And then now, like, I see somebody bleeding, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't. I don't know why. I don't know.
It doesn't affect me at all. Probably because I was desensitized at an early age watching Band of Brothers when I was 12. But
you watched Band of Brothers when you were 12? How would you compare it? Okay, how many times have you watched it?
This is the second time when we most recently
That's
watched
so
it.
Interesting. So what did you think about it as a child versus watching it now as an adult? Like, what were your perspectives on it different?
As a child, like, yeah, I thought it was good. But I didn't really quite understand the brotherhood and the themes behind it. I just wanted to see people get blown up. You know what I mean?
Really? Because there are so many themes in it. And there's a lot of like character development when you were a kid. Like, did you just think those scenes were boring?
I don't really remember what I thought about that. I didn't think they were boring. I just didn't think they were what I think they are now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the way to say it.
Yeah. I was just curious. Okay. Do you want to get into the plot?
Yeah.
Okay. So the movie starts out with you seeing Sandra Voiter and a young student who is interviewing her at her home in Grenoble, France.
Oh, sorry. Fun fact. The movie opens with an instrumental version of 50 Cent's Pimp featuring Snoop Dogg. And their dog is also named Snoop.
Why did they pick that song? It was so perfect for it. It was such a perfect song.
It was so annoying.
Because it was supposed to be annoying, but then it's also like a good song. Like it's a good beat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. I guess it's kind of almost like an obnoxious song in a sense.
It was very obnoxious.
Or at least it's, I hate to call anybody's songs obnoxious, but it's obnoxious if you blast it on the loudspeakers, in your calm, quiet home.
Yeah. So it was like Amazing
Like maybe
Grace.
If you were in a club, like totally the vibe. You know what I mean? There's a time and a place
exactly.
for Snoop and 50 Cent, you know?
Yeah.
So Sandra and the student are drinking wine. They're discussing life. And in my opinion, it honestly seemed like Sandra was like hardcore flirting with this young girl. And she emphasizes many times that she wants to talk about the young woman and her experiences. And she is kind of dodging any question about herself. And Sandra says that she doesn't see people much and she enjoys talking to the woman because she's interesting. She's got exciting ideas. And you can tell from the interview, like Sandra is just grasping at threads for human connection. And also that she's a bit of a narcissist who mm-hmm. greatly enjoys the praise of others.
Yes. Yeah.
So she's a lonely woman and she is in need of affirmation from other people, basically.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because it's not really affirmation from her family. It's from like
people
that she's not close to, which I feel like, okay, this is my opinion. I don't know if this is actually a factual thing, but I kind of would feel like a narcissist is somebody who would care so much about what other people think of them to where they don't care about caring for the people in their lives as much. So like I knew
a guy
who like we're pretty sure was a narcissist and he treated the people close to him like trash. But like if you just met him, you would feel like royalty to him. Like he worked so hard to make people like him and love him to the point where like he neglected those close to him. And I kind of feel like that's how Sandra was on like a lower level of like she didn't dedicate as much to the people close to her, despite having loved them. She put more intention and energy into praise of strangers.
Yeah, she gained more value out of that praise than what connection she had with her.
Yeah, exactly.
Family members.
Yeah, it had way more value to her. So all of a sudden, in the middle of their interview, you hear extremely loud music in the background. You can see the instant annoyance in Sandra. And she says, it's just work being done upstairs. And you don't actually know at the time that it's her husband up there who's fixing the attic and has decided to blast music to a point of like, I don't even know how he was listening to it himself up there.
Yeah. Built different.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, I couldn't listen to like back when I was like doing homework in high school, I had to listen to like instrumental music while like reading, but I could listen to music with words in it while doing math. I don't know how you do anything with that music on.
I don't know. I mean, he was just insulating the attic, so like you could probably do that kind of work with like music like that.
I guess that's true.
But I just don't know how you do work with music that loud. Mm-hmm. That was crazy. So, Sandra and Samuel have a son named Daniel who suffers from partial blindness because of an accident that he had when he was a child. And he also has a dog named Snoop. I don't know if Snoop was a service dog or not, but he was very close to Daniel. Yeah,
it was.
And he helped him like navigate the world a lot. So, they ended up going on a walk around the same time as the young woman was leaving because the music was so loud, they couldn't continue their interview. And when Daniel returns home from his walk, he finds his father dead in front of the home, seeming to have fallen and died. And the music is still like blasting. And Daniel calls for his mother and she comes out.
Yeah, it's like,
she hears him screaming.
Yeah, like the music is still blasting. Like if you're in a car accident, like, and it's a really bad car accident, does the music just keep playing while you're just like laying there? You know what I mean? It's like, even though something terrible in life happens, the music is still playing, which would just suck. You know what I mean?
I know. I think that all the time. Like, if you get in a car accident and people die and there's music still playing on the radio.
Right?
Like that. I've never experienced that. It's not like a trauma or anything, but I just think that that would be really sad, you know?
Yeah.
And so the police arrive and the investigators come. Sandra basically says that when it all happened, she was taking a nap with earplugs. And I'm like, my woman, I don't think earplugs are that good that you could like sleep through that sound.
No.
And she didn't hear her husband like falling to his death from their like third story window. Like, I don't know. I found it kind of sus. And so kind of like at the start, you're like a little suspicious of her.
Yeah.
You know,
I was, the director told Sandra Haller, the director did not tell her whether she was innocent or guilty. Rather, she told Heller to act as if she was innocent.
Heller? Who's that?
The actress, Heller. Sandra Heller. Sandra Heller.
So she was supposed to act like she was innocent?
Yeah.
But she doesn't know if she actually is or not?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting like kind of acting thing to do. That she doesn't even know if she's innocent.
Yeah.
You know? Because then there's no like little bit of conniving or fear that would, I feel like, be instilled in you. I feel like she also felt guilt because regardless of if she killed him or not, he killed himself because he hated her.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that is undisputed, you know?
That's
and so I think she does feel guilty regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the investigators come. Sandra gets a lawyer who is an old friend, Vincent Renzi. And there's a lot of discussion as to if Samuel fell or if there was another outcome such as suicide or homicide. Sandra is instantly considered a suspect as details begin to come out about her and her husband having a pretty volatile relationship. And also the fact that she kind of covers it up at the start.
Yeah.
She kind of pretends like they were in a decent marriage and everything. And I find it so funny that people always say like, only a guilty person would say that and it, say that they're innocent or something. And I'm like, how do you know that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, of course, a guilty person's going to say they're innocent. And of course, an innocent person's going to say they're innocent. And I know there's a lot of like science and study to it. And I'm not saying I'm an expert, but I don't know. It always irks me when they're like, that's what a guilty person would say. Cause it's like, you don't know that.
That's fair. Like, it's like, this isn't. This case is a representative of every other single case.
Yes. And like people experience guilt differently, you know?
Yeah.
Not guilt. Well, yes, guilt.
Guilt.
But grief. I meant to say grief.
Grief,
people
yes.
experience grief differently. So they do an autopsy and they find out that Samuel's wounds cannot conclusively be tied to a suicide, accident, or homicide. So the investigators decide to pursue homicide. They're very suspicious of Sandra, but it takes them a while to like fully get enough evidence to be like, it was you, bitch. So Sandra doesn't believe that Samuel would kill himself, but she does what she can to try and help her lawyer build a case of suicide because it's much easier to prove suicide than it is to prove a fall. So she later calls her lawyer telling him She had a memory come back that months prior to Samuel's death, he had tried to kill himself by overdosing on aspirin and getting like blackout drunk. And she found him passed out. He had thrown up everywhere. And he ended up surviving the suicide attempt. So due to the strain in Sandra and Samuel's marriage, they don't really discuss the issue and they kind of just sweep it under the rug and pretend nothing happened, which I think is probably another reason that Samuel resented her, because he literally tried to kill himself and she like pretended it didn't happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like, yeah. Like I feel like he, I don't know. That's kind of brutal. Resent that as well. So as a viewer, you don't know if Sandra is making a story up or if she's just starting to remember signs of suicidal ideation that were going unnoticed originally. So there's kind of like this complexity of like, do you believe her or not? Because it is suspicious she remembers it later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But maybe she just didn't realize in the moment that these were red flags, you know?
Yeah, yeah, which is understandable.
I feel like anybody who experiences something where somebody in their life does something extremely unexpected and devastating, like, I feel like the people who are survivors of that or family members or people close to them, I feel like there's no way that they don't start to realize like, oh my gosh, this should have been a sign, you know, about little things. Like I should have noticed this. This was a sign that I was like not ignoring, but, you know, not noticing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's just no way that you wouldn't start to do that. And if she starts to like think maybe my husband committed suicide, like, oh my gosh, maybe this one night he had tried to kill himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And she let it go unnoticed, you know?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the person and circumstance.
Yeah. And they were so out of touch with each other. Like, they were married, but they were not together. Like, they were not emotionally there for each other. They were not on the same page about anything. It's very sad. It was very sad.
Yeah, it was more just like, it wasn't like what I got out of it. The main argument wasn't, okay, is she guilty or is she not? It was mainly just an examination of their relationship and how it fell apart and what drove him.
Yeah. So it's almost like the anatomy of the fall of their marriage. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah.
Wow. Deep stuff.
Words play. Feminine. Play words.
So Daniel claims to the police that he heard his parents talking upstairs before he left for his walk and that they were not yelling. The investigators don't quite believe him because how could he hear that over the ridiculously loud music?
Which is fair.
Even though he might have a heightened sense of hearing due to like his partial blindness. So they did a little experiment, which I feel like would be extremely traumatizing and PTSD inducing for a child. But they made him stand in the same exact spot that he would have been standing, and they blast the music while people upstairs in the home were like talking at different vocal levels to see if Daniel could hear. And he wasn't able to hear them until they were like actively yelling. Mm-hmm. So it kind of like disputes Daniel's claims, kind of makes him an unreliable witness because there's no way he could have even heard it because he validated it himself that he wouldn't be able to hear it. But I find that to be unethical to do to a child whose father just died. Like, I just feel like that's really traumatizing.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I don't think there's a easy way around that either.
All's fair in love and war, baby.
Exactly. That's what I would have said.
So they do a test. Daniel realizes there's no way he could have heard them. And then he changes his story and he says, maybe I was actually inside and that's how I heard them talking in a normal voice.
Which
conversation
just makes it even more just messy.
I know.
And suspicious.
It makes him a very unreliable witness, and his mother feels really bad because she is the one who had said that her and Samuel were having a normal conversation, and now she feels like her son is having to lie because he's trying to protect her, and she feels a lot of guilt for that.
Yeah,
because he kind of got dragged into what seems to be her lie that they didn't get in a fight before he died. And I think like just the fact that a child would have to witness, like be a witness in a murder trial between his two parents seems extremely challenging. Like, I wonder if that would be allowed in real life.
That's
like
brutal.
I've heard witness testimony, at least in the movies, they say is highly unreliable. And with his connections to the case, like he could potentially sway from supporting one parent or to the other, like, and reflect that in his testimony. So I find it very crazy. It's traumatizing, but it's an interesting, like, juxtaposition for the movie. But I hope something like this wouldn't happen in real life.
If they would be counted as a reliable witness or not.
I have no idea.
Also, random thought. Like, whenever, like, you hear the movies and the lawyer or the prosecutor says something that they shouldn't have, and the judge is like, jury, don't pay attention to that. Or something like that. And you're like, how do you just
forget that? Strike it from the record.
Yeah. How do you just forget that? I wouldn't be able to. That'd be the only thing I remember.
I know, exactly. I would remember because I was told not to remember it.
Yeah.
But they don't do that at all in this court scene, like in the entire court scenes. And I'm like so infuriated because there were so many things that happened that, in my opinion, would be extremely unprofessional and like completely conjecture
for, like, a French
and
court?
Circumstantial. And I don't know if it's real or not.
Is that accurate?
All I can say is I don't want to be in a French court, period.
Wasn't that far off from my high school lunchroom.
Like, you guys dressed really fancy.
I know, we always did. It was a private school.
Oh my gosh. So the police end up indicting Sandra for the murder of her husband, Samuel, and they pursue a trial while she continues to stand by her innocence and she pleads not guilty. So this is basically initiated because they have all this blood splatter evidence that the police believe is proof that he couldn't have fallen. And also because of the secret recording that they have of Sandra and Samuel getting in a fight the night before he died. So,
which also, recording your fight is a little odd.
That is so messed
up.
But
it's also,
like, that goes to show, like, what mental state are you in that you are recording something, picking a fight just so you can have a video of it?
And then,
like, was he, like, say, did he actually kill himself and was he trying to implicate her as his murderer?
Yeah,
like, is, like, that why he would video it?
If so, that's a genius move. It's terrible, but it's genius.
Well, it didn't work.
Uh-oh, well, yeah.
Just spoiled the movie.
Oops. Well, we were already there.
Yeah. So you don't get to hear the recording. They keep it secret. So you kind of know that it's going to be a bombshell and they talk it up. Like, it's going to ruin Sandra's case and that Samuel basically, like, did not commit suicide. He was murdered by his wife. So while practicing the testimony with her lawyers, Sandra explains that Samuel was technically responsible for the accident that blinded Daniel, putting him in a very depressive state that he never fully recovered from or came back from. And he felt a lot of extreme guilt for what happened to his son.
As but anyone.
Yep. And so Sandra's native tongue is German, but she has to do her testimony in French because she's in France and she hates even practicing the testimony. You can tell she's very uncomfortable even doing it in English. And you can tell personality wise that she's not going to be greatly liked by the jury because she gets very frustrated, I believe, with the translation of having to speak in French. And because of that, it almost, like, conveys her as a very, like, frustrated, short, like, irritated person, which is
good,
like,
point.
Good for the prosecution, but
helps their case.
Yeah. So they tell you that a year passes and the trial has begun, and Sandra's defense team claims that Samuel fell from the attic window and his hit his head on the shed, while the prosecution believes that she hit him with a blunt object and pushed him from the second floor balcony. So during an argument with Samuel's psychiatrist and the prosecutor, she admits that she felt resentment towards Samuel after Daniel's accident. She resents him for reflecting his guilt onto Daniel. And she talks about Daniel saying that she never wanted him to feel handicapped because despite his vision impairment, he's capable and worthy of a full life. And I thought that was a very beautiful thing for a mother to say about her child. But it was interesting how everybody was, like, fully attacking her. Like, everybody had already decided she was guilty. And, like, his psychiatrist came in and was slandering her, saying she was the worst wife in the world. And she made such a good point. She was like, if I had been seeing a psychiatrist while I was married to Samuel, they could come up here and say a multitude of terrible things about Samuel, just like you're saying about me.
Yes, yeah.
And those are just fragments of their relationship. Like, that is no proof. That is just Samuel venting to somebody who he pays to vent to, you know?
Yeah. That's,
I'm not saying that's what a psychiatrist is. Obviously, it's more than that, but You know what I mean?
Conclusive evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not conclusive evidence that they had a terrible marriage.
Sorry, fun fact. That has nothing to do with what you're talking about. Because I forgot to mention it earlier. The very beginning of the movie, the ball bouncing down the stairs was the most difficult shot to get.
Really?
They needed the ball to not bounce too fast and roll out of frame, so they dipped it in a dog-friendly glue to slow the ball down.
Interesting. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of those...
the balls from Pixar?
Nope. It reminded me of the ghost watcher shows where they're like, push the ball down the stairs.
Oh my god.
And then they push it and it goes boop 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 boop, and they're like, it's a ghost.
God, those are just bull crap.
That's what it reminded me of. I felt like there must have been some symbolism to that, like, first scene of the movie, but I don't know what it was.
I was trying to think of the same thing after that scene. I was like, why would they make that the first shot?
I don't know, because the second I saw it, I was like, oh, is he going to fall down the stairs?
Oh.
Like, that's what I thought, but no, he doesn't. He falls off the balcony.
I do that with a lot of movies. I'm like, first shot, why did they do that? And then I compare it to the last shot a lot.
Hmm. I don't remember the last shot. She was sleeping with Snoop.
Yeah, sleeping with Snoop. Which, glad the dog gets some more screen time.
The dog, I loved it. There were a lot of things that they showed from the dog's point of view, which was interesting. Like, they were kind of following the dog around to a certain extent. And that they did a good job at making you fall in love with him. And then they
best supporting dog.
Break your hearts. So, they play the tape in court where Samuel accuses Sandra of plagiarism, infidelity, and controlling every aspect of his life. He states that she imposes everything that she wants in life on him, and it's his responsibility to provide that for her. And I really thought this audio was going to be highly damning for Sandra, but I believe it actually helped her case in saying that he was not in a stable mindset. Because Samuel was running in circles with the same arguments over and over again, saying things like he isn't able to speak his mother tongue, French, with her at home, even though she can't either. She's a native German. So English, in her opinion, was the middle ground for their relationship. He also homeschools Daniel, and it takes up all his time, and he blames that for him not being able to write. Even though he chooses to homeschool Daniel, she doesn't force him to, and he doesn't want to stop. So how is that her fault? And then they moved to his hometown of France, because that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to move there and renovate this house. And for some reason, he's blaming her for stealing his culture and his home tongue away from him. And one interesting note to me about this whole thing of him imposing his culture, her imposing her culture on him, was that their kid only speaks in French and he never responds in English, and he never speaks German either. So is that because he believes his mom is controlling and he has to choose, and he's so close to his father, so he only speaks French as some sort of retaliation to his mom? Hmm. Or is it because his mother has compromised by moving to France and speaking French in the home with her son? And that's why.
That's a good question. That's a really good point.
Like, that is a huge point, that her son only speaks French, and her husband is saying that she has imposed everything on their life, she's very good at French, in my opinion, but she is not comfortable speaking French.
That's I forgot what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you never hear her speak German once in the whole movie.
Yeah, you don't. You're right.
Yeah.
Do the English or French.
And as if she's forcing him. You know what I mean? It's so weird. So Samuel seems very erratic, and he's not in a good headspace in the recording. And Sandra doesn't help in the recording because she does egg on the fight, but you can tell it's because she's annoyed and tired of his repeated complaints and bringing up old fights.
Yeah, this is clearly not the first time they have argued about all these things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And one of the things he likes to bring up is Sandra's infidelity. And we learned that Samuel was jealous of Sandra having a woman over in the first scene, and that's why he blasted the music on high, which in my opinion is just a very childish reaction to something. Like, that is not the way that an adult should act. You know what I mean? If they are in a marriage with another adult, which they should always only be in a marriage with another adult, they shouldn't be like playing music loud in spite of them. I've never done anything. And now we've only been together for like 5 years, but I've never done anything just to spite you, to piss you off because I'm so mad at you. Like, that is ridiculous. Yeah, that is very ridiculous. Yeah. So at the end of the audio tape, there's a bunch of violent crashing sounds. And according to the prosecution, they think that she beat him up and that she was an abuser.
The prosecution was going in on her just with about like everything.
Circumstantial stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sandra provides evidence of dents in the wall to show that Samuel would frequently punch the walls in fits of anger. And that seems a lot more feasible to me than her beating him, seeing that the only wound that she had was on her wrist. And it kind of seemed as if it was implied to be more of a defensive wound rather than like who hits somebody with their wrist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's going to break your hand.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know anything about like defensive wounds and
defensive maneuvers.
Yeah, I don't. do you sound like you do.
I know all about defensive maneuvers.
Really? So you're never on the offense, you're always on the defense?
I wouldn't say that.
So the prosecution just continually tries to flip the story to be that Sandra was tormenting Samuel and that she boiled over and killed her husband. And honestly, the more and more they drilled it in and the more and more evidence, I'm putting quotes in the air as I say that, that they provide is like so circumstantial. Like it's ridiculous.
It is pretty circumstantial. It's so annoying. But at the same time, it's like one of those movie moments where it's like so frustrating. You're like, are they seriously asking her that? Like in the trial of Chicago 7 and how terrible the judge was.
Oh my God. It's like so infuriating.
Yeah, those frustrating movie moments where you're just like, God, that character, no, like, just go away.
It drives you crazy. That's how I felt about the prosecutor, too.
Yeah.
So Sandra insists that she consensually borrowed an idea from one of Samuel's discarded novel outlines that she turned into her own very successful book. The prosecutor then reads a section of one of her books where a character idolized the death of another character as if he could somehow prove that Sandra was actually writing about her husband because she said she takes inspiration from her life in previous interviews when she talks about her books. And this was when I started to get so frustrated with the prosecution, like you were saying. I was like, you are reading from a woman's fictional book about a side minor character in the book and pretending this is somehow evidence in court that she killed her husband.
This isn't Basic Instinct. Like, yeah, it's not. It's
their
not
arguments were so, so bad. It was so infuriating.
Yeah, they were reaching.
So he claims that Samuel would not have killed himself after fighting so aggressively for his independence, while Vincent talks about Samuel's aggression as more as a final, like, feet before like the end, like a man about to give up, you know what I mean, at his end. So Daniel is extremely traumatized by hearing the deep secrets of his parents' marriage, and he asks the judge if he can testify again in front of the court because he has remembered some pertinent evidence. So that weekend he asks for his mother to leave the house so that he can be alone. Obviously, a witness and a defendant living in the same home could potentially be a conflict of interest, as we discussed earlier.
That was an excellent use of that
term. Thank you so much. So they did have a court-appointed supervisor or guardian to prevent the mother and the son from speaking about the trial when they were in the home, but his mother is heartbroken when he asks her to leave because she thinks she has lost him and that he's going to testify against her, which I can't even imagine how painful that is, feeling that your child has turned against you and thinks that you're a murderer. And I was wondering if he was doing it to just have a moment to think away from her, or if he was doing it to make his testimony seem more valid because there was no chance she could have influenced him if she was not with him. So he doesn't really know if she's guilty or not, and he's fully struggling with it. And he asks his guardian who she believes, and he doesn't want to decide for himself one of two evils, either his mother being a murderer or his father having killed himself.
Either way, yeah. It's not a good.
But this is where the symbolism of him being blind comes in, because he's not a witness, a blind witness having like heard the murder. He's just their blind son, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think the symbolism is like, he never fully saw either of his parents, and this trial is what truly gave him the sight to see like the reality of his family, regardless of if he could physically see them or not. So,
yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
That's cool. I like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it was very eye-opening for him. So Daniel realizes that there was a night in the past months where Snoop came into his room smelling like throw up and being very sleepy and thirsty. And Daniel just thinks that his dog like threw up and was sick on his own. But then he was realizing maybe he smelled like throw up because he was in the throw up that my father threw up when he overdosed or tried to overdose. So he does an experiment where he poisons his dog with aspirin to see what would happen. And this scene is extremely brutal to watch. Dogs, in my opinion, are a very soft topic. And I was just thinking of Beans the whole time, like watching it. Like it was so heartbreaking.
It's a hard to watch scene.
Yeah. And yeah. So Snoop almost dies from it, but his guardian comes and helps him bring Snoop back by making him throw up. And there were chunks of pills in the vomit, just like how his mother had described Samuel's vomit when he had attempted suicide. And this also goes to show like the extreme point of desperation that, you know, like the one creature in the world that Daniel feels closest to and the most comfortable with in this like extreme volatile time in his life is his dog. And he wants answers so badly that he's willing to risk his dog's life for it.
Yeah.
So
that's some heavy shit.
Yeah, it was very heavy. So Snoop is then super sleepy and super thirsty like he was on that one night that Daniel remembers. And so now Daniel feels like he can corroborate his mother's testimony that his father attempted suicide. So he's really struggling with everything and his guardian pretty much tells him that even though it's her job to prevent interference in his testimony, tells him that he needs to believe what he can live with, which in my opinion sounds interfering. You know what I mean? Like he's about to testify something.
It sounds what?
It sounds like interference to me in his testimony.
Gotcha.
Daniel goes up and he tells this entire testimony to the court. And he also talks about how one day when he was bringing Snoop to the hospital with his dad, Samuel implied about his own suicidal thoughts while talking about the dog's potential death. And Daniel believes that that was Samuel kind of trying to relate to Daniel, his own death, his own suicide. So Sandra is then acquitted. She comes home, puts Daniel to bed, and looks at pictures of her and Samuel before she falls asleep on the couch with her puppy Snoop. And that's the end of the movie. Yep.
Movie. We got to pick what we want to do.
Killers.
Next time. Well, there's The Killer. There's also Saltburn. You could do.
We can do whatever one you want. I don't care. We'll do them eventually, so just whatever one you want to do first.
That's true. Well, we can watch The Killer anytime you want because it's on Netflix. So
let's do that one.
Cool.
Okay. Bye, guys.